If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to episode 102 of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for July 4th weekend. It's actually Monday, July 3rd, when we're recording this, 2017. He's Ian Ferguson.
I am.
I am Pat Contry. We got an awesome show lined up for you. I'm trying to be as enthusiastic as I can because I'm tired.
Yeah. Ian's tired too. Hell, we're both real tired today.
This is why, you know, we're trying to switch to record on like afternoon, morning. It's a lot easier, but we want to enjoy our 4th of July. We're very patriotic fellows. We're going to be cooking burgers and dogs and shooting off fireworks and blowing up off fingers with M80s and whatever else is American. We're going to be doing that probably tomorrow.
I just want to drink beer and grill.
Or that. So we'll be talking about the SNES Classic Edition announced. Yes, we record this podcast twice a month. Don't fret.
Sure, it's not late. Behind.
Yeah, I know, we're behind, guys. But you want to hear our opinion is a lot better than anyone else's. That's why you're waiting for ours. Guys, don't take it seriously. It's sarcasm, but it's also true.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Sega Forever. Always Sega. The SNES Hyperkin Mouse. That's interesting. Ron Howard, the new director of Han Solo, First Blood. A scumbag solve of the week. Q&A plus your Patreon special Q&A segment. Ian, what's been going on in Fergusonville?
Well,
102 episodes of this shit. Can you believe that?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Like, 100's, like, yeah, 100's, now I'm just tired of it, want to just leave.
But the problem is now we need to do, I would say,
at least 15 more?
At least 25 more total. 20.
To justify the awesome theme song we now have?
That's exactly where I was going with this. We have to justify the theme song.
Or CFOs will kill me.
I'm going to see an allergy specialist on July 6th.
That's very exciting. Is that on top of the NES you have? ACNES?
Yeah.
Which is a condition, folks, not just the fact that he owns an NES, we all do.
Yeah, because I don't think this had happened the last time we had done a podcast. I was in the emergency room twice again in 24 hours.
That's fantastic.
For an allergy, supposedly due to ibuprofen, because my shitty specialist basically overprescribed it to me, and while I wasn't taking it as much as he had told me to, I was still, it was the only course of action he was suggesting.
Is it an allergy because, which is great, just numb the pain with some, you know, fucking...
Kill my liver with, you know, yeah. You know, the ibuprofen.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And aspirin wouldn't do the same job, I guess, or...
Aspirin, actually, they told me, is a no-no as well. Really, all I can take for pain now is acetaminophen.
Okay.
But I still, I mean, I'm doing it right now. I'm breaking out in a minor case of hives.
That's because you're just allergic to me, though, at this point.
Well, yeah, that too. So, I mean, this is less worse than it was. But anyways, yeah, I got to go see an allergy specialist. And then I got to go find a new gut specialist.
That should be the name. When I graduate from medical school, I want to be a gut specialist. Yeah, not gastrointestinal, just a gut specialist.
However, I have been finding that some very light massage, now that I've really located the trigger points, can numb the pain for about 10 minutes at a time, which is a long enough window to get some stretching, and I haven't noticed any real benefit from that, but it's a start, so I'm trying to be optimistic.
Stretching on your ball, not ball stretching. Change the moniker to stretching.
I'm stretching on the ball, on not the ball. Doing ball stretches. other than that, I've been playing the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I saw it on Twitter, or it was a moment where people said, "Is Crash Bandicoot always this hard?"
was like, yeah. Has it always been that hard?
I mean, Crash Bandicoot 1 was pretty difficult, but all my friends sat down and passed the controllers around and 100%ed it after school, you know, like you do, you know, because it's a video game. And Crash Bandicoot 2 and 3 aren't that
hard. We had it, and damn it, we liked it.
I wish people would stop fucking comparing everything to Dark Souls. It's like, you're creatively bankrupt.
Mega Man 2 is Dark Souls.
You all suck at
writing. Just because that's a difficult game.
And then we talked about it a while ago on the podcast, ages ago, but Super Russian Roulette.
Oh, fuck yeah. That was one of the most excited we ever were.
We were so fucking excited for this.
I'm not trying to trash here the NES homebrew community. I can see the fucking forum post come up on my favorite website.
But it is bereft of a lot of truly creative ideas.
The issue I see sometimes is they're not trying to use the NES and the gameplay in a slightly different creative way we haven't seen before.
Right.
And Super Russian Roulette, it's a new Zapper game, but it's also a really weird party game.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about it a little bit. This is just real quick. It's not sponsored. This isn't a sponsor.
We did a whole segment on it. You can go and look at it.
Well, yeah, but I've played it consistently over the past 3 days.
He was nice enough to send us a copy.
Yeah, and that was super nice of Andrew Raitano. I keep hoping I get his last name correctly. But it's fun. And as he put it, because I've been in contact with him, it's incredibly polished. There's so much stuff to see in the game. So many idle animations.
There's like, what, 10 minutes of speech?
It's like 9 minutes of speech.
8 megabit cartridge.
And a ton of like idle animations and different little things. Ways you can piss off the cowboy to get him to just straight up kill you instead of you killing yourself. I don't want to get into a lot of them because that's the fun. That's the spoilers.
It's a Russian roulette game if you haven't figured it out.
I do want to state that last night I was playing with a couple of friends, and yeah, it's best with some beers and stuff, but real quick, when the cowboy dies first, all the music cuts out, and the cowboy's just dead on the table, the game takes a substantially fucking darker turn when there's no music, and it's just you and your friends sitting in a circle passing a gun around. So,
oh my god,
I keep finding new things, but literally, I had to bring it up, because yes, I've been doing it, and I've played it 3 times in like the 4 or 5 nights I've had the cartridge, so that's been a lot of fun, too.
Jeez, now they're gonna kill me. There are good NES homebrews out there. There's the what was it? The Halloween 85 and 86 haunted ones.
Yeah,
are good little beat 'em ups.
For what it is, I mean, I'm not gonna trash Battle Kid. Battle Kid was fun.
That was like the first one. Yeah, of the modern era.
It was very well done. And yeah, there is good stuff.
There's
out
that one. Someone sent me. Someone just sent me one. I got to try. It looks good. But I can't comment on it yet. But there was that one that was sent to us. I don't know if we played it, where it was actually like almost like a real time. It was a turn based strategy game, like medieval.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, cool. That was cool.
So yeah, before you kill me, there are good ones, but
this one tickled my dark humor funny bone.
Okay, so I went to. First of all, Ian, did you see? You love Pixel Dan. We all love Pixel Dan.
I do love Pixel Dan.
Did you listen to the Not So Common podcast with me and Pixel Dan, our conversation?
Not
about
yet, no.
Toys and stuff. Check that out. I was at too many games. Thanks to everyone who came out and said hi to me. Fortunately, this year I didn't have to deal with a drunk YouTuber trying to claim that I cost him his YouTube career for some fucking weird reason because he had beer strength and was really, really fucking awkward. Didn't have to deal with that this year.
That's good.
There's always other awkwardness at too many games. It happened to you 1 year. It happened to me last year at Wars. But that's fine. Other than the awkwardness with YouTubers that we have a problem with, it was a good event. It was a fun event.
Was it? I missed it.
Ian missed it. We'll see in the future. he takes a shot. But I went to the Jersey Shore. It was the first time I went back since 2000 and... Jesus fucking Christ. 2012, which was the year before Superstorm Sandy. And then the year after that was the... Which did more damage to the important part I'll get to. Was the fire started at Coors Ice Cream that destroyed 2 whole blocks of Seaside Heights amusements and boardwalks. And unfortunately, part of the 2 blocks was Flashbacks Arcade, which was the last remaining like old school arcade in all of New Jersey. And I made it a point in my 2 Pat the NES Punk Jersey Shore videos where I go back that and document every fucking machine. So go and watch that, because now that's a historical relic. like the light gun machine where you shoot the owl and the guy playing the piano creepily. But they had, I don't know, 80 classic arcade games, 35 to 40 pinball machines, all fucking gone. An old carousel, all burnt away. So that, I literally cried when I saw the board. We approached from Seaside Park on the south side, so I got it over with right away. But either way, it was great. I played the Frog Bog. Hadn't done that in 20 years. First shot, got it, and I won a couple of these guys you see here. Nice. Oh, no, I won this nerdy pencil that I won on a somehow legal wheel. That's somehow legal. I still don't know how it's legal. It's a game of chance. It's absolutely a game of chance for money. That aside, I had a fun time. I checked out the New Japan Pro Wrestling G1 special, which was live on Saturday on Access TV. It was two nights. We did Saturday and Sunday. I think Sunday night is replayed on Friday. But spoilers, my pal Kenny Omega won. Don't do that.
Every time.
he won the New Japan Pro Wrestling inaugural. They had a tournament for the U.S. Championship, and he won it.
That's
so
cool.
Good on him. Fan of the podcast, fan of a certain NES guidebook. and other than that, there's that Ultimate Game Guide for NES. App is almost at 1.3, and that'll come out. Ian.
Yes, sir.
We are so late on this news. But you know who spoke about this last week? That wacky Pat the NES Punk spoke about the SNES Classic Edition, or the Super Nintendo Classic Edition, if you want to call it that.
But not the SNES. Classic.
Not the SNES, because you don't fucking call it the SNES or NES. That aside. You know why you don't call it? I'm not going to get into it. You don't call it for GameCube. It's GameCube GC. Anyway, so were you surprised at this announcement in terms of the breadth and scope of the 21 games? We had tried to predict this, remember, last year, what games could possibly be on a Super Nintendo Classic Edition, and we thought it'd be 30 games. We were wrong there. We thought, you know, they did 20 plus a bonus, which we'll get into. But we were pretty on point with most of the selections there. Not that we're geniuses, but we figured you need to get your bread and butter titles in there.
Were we spot on?
Not spot on. People are going to kill us for that. We were pretty accurate in terms of what you had to get.
I don't recall. I actually.
Let's go. You want to run through the titles? Super Mario World, Super Mario Kart, Zelda Link to the Past, F-Zero. Super Metroid, no-brainers. Street Fighter 2 Turbo, we called for that. Super Punch-Out, Super Castlevania 4, a Donkey Kong Country, you get the first one. The Mega Man X, Kirby Superstar, a Final Fantasy, we said, you get Final Fantasy 3. Kirby's Dream Course, I don't know if we called for that one, but that's a fine choice.
That's a damn good game.
Star Fox, of course. Yoshi's Island, why not? Super Mario RPG, it's a first-party title, right?
Squaresoft developed it.
Well, Nintendo published that, though, right?
But at the very least, I mean, it makes sense because they got the license from Final Fantasy III, or from SquareSoft.
Contra 3. Secret of Mana, Earthbound, which I remember at the time saying that I don't think that would make it. I think it's not mainstream enough, but it made it. Earthbound got in there.
It's definitely mainstream enough at this point.
At this point, but not when it came out, I would argue. And then they got the hard-on for Ghosts and Goblins because you got Super Ghouls and Ghosts. Coming on there, but that's better. I'd rather have that than Ghosts and Goblins on the NES Classic Edition.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely. I mean, at least from where I sit, that's a game that people always look for the system. I think the selection of games is knockout, and that's from a person who, I mean,
there's no filler. The NES Classic had some filler. Had a few titles that you could say construe as filler. This has absolutely no filler.
I would probably not play Donkey Kong Country. That's about it.
Sure, but that's still an iconic title.
It is. You would have to put it on there, and I realize a lot of people would be upset if that wasn't on there. But that's personally probably the only one I wouldn't play. Honestly, I also probably these days wouldn't touch many of the RPGs for time reasons, but they would be games I would be tempted to play.
Sure, but these are like, you have to put one of the Final Fantasies that gets on there. Right?
No, and you put six on there, or three, or whatever you want to call it.
3/6, sure. And like I said, the Earthbound surprised me a little bit, but now it's gotten bigger since the cult following has gotten bigger since, you know, it first was released. I am surprised that there's no I don't count Punch Out as a sports game. I'm surprised they didn't just throw in something like Super Tennis, something that's like, you know, a lot of people had it. It was one of those early titles.
Super Tennis,
and
it's a fun
game.
Or you know? I'm actually surprised that the original NCAA.
But it's probably because it has NCAA in the name.
Yeah. Plus those and like Stanley Cup hockey. You try actually playing those.
Stanley Cup hockey is miserable.
But Super Tennis. I remember like you if you got the Super Nintendo early, like that was like their go-to sports title because it was fun and arcadey kind of. But you couldn't do
Ken Griffey because of the licensing. No. But Super Batter Up would have been pretty fun too.
Not as ubiquitous as Ken Griffey though. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or Super Tennis. That surprised me. They upped the price to $80, which makes perfect sense because people said, "Oh, they're not making the NES Classic Edition anymore because they're not making any money on it." Well, now they're making money on it because it's $20 more.
I wish they would have thrown Kirby's Dream Land 3 in there just to finish up the Kirby, or at least the. That's a tough game to find, and it's expensive. My question is, along with that $80, yeah, it does come with two
controllers.
I think that alone right there is worth it.
Well, you couldn't find the extra controller.
Right, exactly.
Yes, you can use a Classic Controller, Controller Pro, but if you wanted a second one, you couldn't fucking find
it. Bump the price up $20. They were scalping the second controllers for more than
$20. $60, $70.
So the value there, I think, is built into the box.
And plus, when you look at it, an NES title in Virtual Shop was, what, $5 usually?
Yes.
And Super Nintendo's like, what, $7 or $8?
$7.99.
So even by that, 8 times 20 games is $160 if you want to go that route.
Also, you have to look at the fact that you are getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, if you count the hack and slashes, 5 meaty RPG, three RPGs, traditional RPGs, and 2 hack and slashes. You're getting a lot more depth per game in this bundle
versus NES Classic, because yes. NES Classic you'll get Final Fantasy 1.
You get more pick up and play titles in the NES Classic. In this
is
you're
like,
getting longer and deeper games.
This you're getting like the whole like meat and potatoes of the system.
Yeah,
in its entirety. And we spoke about it before. It's a good thing that Nintendo, like you get the Super Mario RPG. Yes, they didn't develop it, but it's a Mario title. Mm-hmm. So Nintendo has at least some leverage there to bring that game out again. But yeah, I'm just, again, shocked about that. But about no sports title at all. That, to me, is kind of weird how they couldn't like throw a Super Tennis on just for shit and giggles. But
I think it's because their most iconic ones are licensed.
Sure. I just said for a bonus. Like, why not? Like, have one sports title. But
whereas Tecmo was iconic and didn't have any real licenses attached to it that they needed to worry about.
Well, they got rid of the player names, which made it kind of weird to play. But then you get the first time ever... Never before released, unless you played the ROM or got one of those shoddy repro carts, Star Fox 2. See, that to me is not worth the price of admission, but if you had any quibbles at all, because I've seen people bitch about this already saying, well, it's not worth the value. I don't know how, because in cartridge form, these games would cost you, what, $600, $500 to get all these, roughly? There's a lot of $30, $40 titles in here. Earthbound's still a $200 title. Alone, Mega Man X is a $50 title now, right?
40.
Castlevania 4 is what?
40.
Super Metroid, 40 to 50.
50 probably.
Link to the Past, $40.
Super
Mario,
30.
Super Mario Kart, 20, 25. So you have a
25, 30. Yep.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just saying, like,
it adds up.
I'm now just wondering if we're behind the curve on pricing.
We could be. But are you excited about that bonus? I was surprised they did this.
That's worth the price of admission to me alone because I love the concept of Star Fox, but I feel like the games got too fucking convoluted as they went on.
Okay.
And I would love to play a simpler Star Fox again.
Well, I'm not sure how simple this is compared to the first one. If you've actually seen the gameplay.
No, I have, but I still would like to play what they intended to truly be the sequel to
sure.
the game.
And people can't pass judgment because the ROM out there was, I don't think, was ever finished. Like, it's a finished game, but, like, I don't think they ever put it through its entire paces where it's like, all
right,
let's...
Right, but it has been confirmed that they did not go back and finish this game. This is actually finished back then. They didn't do any...
No extra shit?
They didn't do any finishing. The game was finished back then. They just never released it.
Oh, okay.
So this is... I'm excited for that. And it... Honestly, this is more appealing... It's funny because, like I said, I've never been a huge Super Nintendo fan, but this is more appealing to me than the NES Classic was because I don't buy any Super Nintendo games. The Super Nintendo games that are in mine and Bonnie's apartment are hers, we have a Super Nintendo, but even the few games that I want, I do have a couple, but I rarely hook up the Super Nintendo to play them. This is a really good list of games that I would probably, if available, buy most of on the Virtual Console. I'm not going to go out of my way for this, but I would actually probably be more tempted to pick one of these up if I actually see it and walk by it in a store than I would be the NES Classic.
Well, the good news is that Nintendo sort of learned their lesson on this because they've come out and said, unlike with the NES Classic, this is going to be a limited release. It's only going to be this year, September through December. So that's like, all right, you at least gave us that heads up, assholes, because last time you didn't. Sorry, you're not assholes, Nintendo, don't kill me. Don't send your hit squad after me. But they at least gave us the heads up, because before they're like, well, we never intended the NES Classic to be, a full-time release. Well, they never said that, so you can't just pull the rug out from under us. And they also said they're going to make significantly more. But who the hell knows what that means? Because it's not like they made, what was the NES Classic? They made, like, they shipped 2 million of them only. So significantly more can mean three.
They made 2 million of them? I find that even hard to believe.
That's what I thought numbers. I'll look it up again. Significantly more can be 3.5, and that's still not enough. You need to make like 10.
No, they didn't even come anywhere close. I mean,
that's what I mean, though. But significantly
doubling it is not more. They really need to.
That's what I mean. Significantly more can mean, if you want to look at statistics, that can mean 50% more, significantly more, still not enough. If they make 3 million, that's not enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not. So, let's talk about the controller ports. I'm a little disappointed there. I'm a little disappointed that they're flipped down and you plug in the regular connections. With the NES, you can get away with it because it blended better with the controller ports. So, it bothers me a little bit. But then again, I guess they didn't want to have it entirely where you just plug it in there, and then you have that—you don't have that little semi-iconic little grid, oval grid port there. But yeah, again, though, you don't have to look for a fucking an extra controller because that worked horribly the first time.
Yeah,
they made like 2% of the amount of second controllers versus the system. Like, it was just awful. So the Japanese games are a little bit different as they were with the NES Classic Edition. Besides it looking like the Famicom, the same as the Super Nintendo PAL version.
You know what's funny about that, though? I'm looking at it. I mean, someone can correct me if I'm wrong. There are significantly less interesting two-player games on the Super Nintendo Mini.
Are there really?
You got your alternating Super Mario World
Kart?
And your Mario Kart, but F-Zero is single-player. Everyone forgets
Street
that.
Street Fighter 2 is a huge one.
Yes. It is.
Yeah, then you're running out of steam.
Right? And then you start to run out of steam.
Yoshi's Island.
Dream Course. Contra. Two-player Contra. And Secret of Mana is big for the multiplayer.
Okay. It's not the same.
It's funny.
But I think Street Fighter 2 alone will sell it to the casual crowd. That alone will do it.
And it's Turbo, if I'm not mistaken,
yes, it is.
Which is my favorite version of
the
system.
But it's different in Japan, though, which is interesting.
I actually didn't look into what was different in Japan.
This is what's different. All right, so in Japan, you get Contra 3, Donkey Kong Country, F-Zero, Final Fantasy VI, which is 3. Then you get Fire Emblem.
Well, that's big for over there.
And you get Legend of the Mystical Ninja, which is obviously a much bigger series.
Mm-hmm.
There. Still a good game here.
Yeah.
Kirby Superstar, Mega Man X, Panel de Pan, which is what, Tetris Attack?
That's Tetris Attack, yeah.
So that's interesting.
That's a really good game.
See, that's
too.
The glaring thing. There was no puzzle game.
I might have. I mean, but it's tough with such a good list of games. What would you swap out?
Okay. Then it gets a little stranger. Okay, you get Secret of Mana, Star Fox 1 and 2. Then you get Super Soccer. So you get your. Exactly. They could have put that on the US one. That was a fairly big game here, Super Soccer. But to put it on the Japanese console is kind of strange to me.
I think that's a waste of space.
Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Mario Kart, Mario RPG, both Mario World, Super Metroid, Legends of the. Then instead of Street Fighter 2 Turbo, you get Super Street Fighter 2, which I think is very interesting. I'm not sure if that was bigger in Japan than here.
It must have been. Super Street Fighter 2 is a great game, but I just think that I don't know if it was. I don't know when it was released in the U.S., but I just feel like that when people think of Super Nintendo in the U.S. and Street Fighter, they think of Turbo.
You're not getting Kirby's Dream Course. You're just getting Superstar. You are not getting Earthbound. And you are not getting.
Okay, so that's a huge omission, I think, for a lot of people.
Let's see.
I think most people would take Earthbound over Fire Emblem.
What the hell's replaced for Super Soccer? What the fuck did they swap out for that? I'm trying to see what they
swapped out. I'd take Kirby Dream Course over Super Soccer.
Okay. Anyway, it's hard to compare back and forth like that. But anyway, so $80. I think that's a fine price point. I think they could have got away with the Super Nintendo Classic, assuming the NES Classic at $80, and I would have been okay with that, even with one controller. But the two controllers kind of makes it all right. So September 29th. So they're going to get it in stock way before Black Friday and Christmas season this time to try to, massage it into people's homes. And this is my massage movement.
Yeah.
Here. All right, anything else to say about this, or are you excited about it? You're going to get the Japanese one because it looks cute and cool?
No, like I said, I'm not necessarily going to go actively out of my way for it, but if they do stock well enough and I happen to see one, yeah, I'll probably grab it.
And play it.
Yes. It'll satisfy my random SNES urges. All right, Sega Forever. I think this is a fairly interesting concept. So Sega is on an extraordinarily daunting quest to release every single game they've ever made.
Sega published.
Sega published.
Okay.
Yeah. They've made. That they've published, spanning all of their consoles.
Including the SG-1000, which no one knows about in North America, which I think is funny.
Onto mobile platforms, I believe iOS and Android. They've already started. I believe the first one was actually, unless only certain people got it into their hands, was actually last week with Phantasy Star 2, because I heard people talking about it online.
So this is an app.
Yes. Well, no. They released them. It's a name that you can search. It's not an app. You can search under the you can search Sega Forever, and it brings up all the games under the Sega Forever line.
I'm going to search right now. Okay.
And you can download the games for free.
Sonic, Altered Beast, Kid Chameleon, Phantasy Zone, and Comic Zone.
These are simple ROM emulations, and apparently the emulation currently is not fantastic. There were people complaining about Phantasy Star 2 last week.
I'm going to get it right now and try it while we do this. Fuck it. All right.
I'm sure in an RPG you'll find it very quickly. I think it's a rather cool idea. Even if the emulation is not great, which they could always fix, because it allows people to
go on, Ian.
I'm just wondering why you're not turning the volume down.
This is a live review. It's a let's play.
Great.
On the podcast.
It allows people to taste, I mean, any game they want to from Sega's library. Now, obviously, this is going to be a very long project. They said not to expect Saturn games for at least 2 weeks or 2 years. But it'll be interesting to see if they can actually do it. Oh, what?
I was going to say, Saturn games on your iPhone or Android phone?
Yeah.
Okay, that seems ambitious. Plus, those games are big, aren't they?
You can get Crazy Taxi on your phone right now.
How big are these?
That's on the Dreamcast.
How big are these for your phone?
Big.
Okay. All right. Hope you got that 32 gig or 64 gig phone. All right.
Anyways. Some
don't chastise me. That's something to be concerned with. Some people still have 8 or 16 gig phones.
I mean, yes, that's true. But I'm just saying a CD is 750 megabytes, roughly.
Great. That's 1/32nd of a 32 gig phone. That's big to me.
Yes,
for a game.
But people have been downloading Grand Theft Auto on their
phones. Don't give me shit.
Forever.
Go on, Ian.
I'm just saying this is
not
new.
Don't fucking give me shit. It makes sense, that argument. Go on. Anyway.
5 years ago. I'm just saying people have been doing it forever.
All right, it's trying to side into Game Center. Okay.
So, anyways, I think this is a very interesting idea. And I think it works because they're doing it on mobile. So this is not the ideal way to play a lot of platformers, a lot of action games. It gets people interested in the properties. It gets people looking for them on other platforms where they may pay for them.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory.
But if you can't play the game on your phone properly,
is that enough of a tease for you to go and get it on the
proper
console?
Talked about emulation before. Back in the day, you couldn't play all the games properly on emulators in the 90s, and it caused us to go out and seek out games.
Oh, you could play them properly pretty fucking quickly with your Gravis gamepad. You could play them properly.
Not
was in
the
issue.
Genesis. We're talking the NES.
Yeah, but that's not the Apple ID you entered couldn't be found or your password is incorrect.
It's amusing to me that you're so anti this, and we did talk about
this. I'm not
this
anti
earlier.
This. I'm just saying, when have I? First of all, me and Ian are not anti emulation. I hate when people say we are, but
no,
I'm anti trying to play classic games on your phone because it sucks dick.
Right,
playing them on your phone, it's fucking terrible.
Yes, but it could get you interested in checking out the game on another platform like Steam, where they release them for ultra cheap.
How? Okay,
with the ability to mod, like. Infinitely.
How many people are going to go that are aware that Comic Zone exists as a game and already don't have it as either a ROM or a cartridge are going to go download it on the phone first to see if they like it and then go back and try to get it in an actual playable format?
Or just for free to fuck with it? Why not? It's an act of goodwill on Sega's part. Why not fucking do it?
Okay.
I mean, I don't see what's wrong with that here. I mean, it's free Sega games.
Okay.
It's not ideal, but the other thing is for their games like RPGs, it doesn't matter. RPGs play fine on a phone.
Oh yeah, you're fine with that, but that's like going to be 2% of the games. So, I mean,
I have nothing more to say.
Well, fuck it, because I can't log in. It's not accepting my login because I know I'm not. Please enter your age. Oh, that's weird. I just did log in. I am.
Anyways, I have nothing more to say about this. I think it's a neat idea.
Years old. Here, Sonic would like to send you notifications. Don't allow. Okay, so the login didn't work, but I still got in here. I just want to play Sonic. Like, if I can't play Sonic, I can't play any game on here. Just about right. Press start. The cartridge comes out. Ad supported. Play for free or buy for $1.99.
Yes, I know. It's still every game for free.
Interesting that they show the Mega Drive version of the game cartridge, which actually looks better than ours. And now a 30-second ad of Terminator on the phone.
Yes, you watch a 30-second ad, and then you play the game for free.
Okay, well, I got to play this while we do this, so let's go on here. So, so what is the frequency of release going to be on these games?
Every 2 weeks.
Now, the top 10 games we want to see, this is off of Metro UK. They want to see Streets of Rage. That'll get on there. Revenge of Shinobi, of course. Gunstar Heroes. Well, they need to get the rights to that, right? Jet Set Radio.
They published it.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah, they published Gunstar Heroes. It was made by Treasure, but they published it.
Panzer Dragoon.
Panzer Dragoon Saga is going to be the extraordinarily tough one because they don't have the source code anymore. Everyone wonders why there's no ports. It's because they lost the source code. So that one's going to be legitimately difficult to do.
Now it's saying, open this page in the App Store. What? Download app? What? I just downloaded. What the fuck is this? It's like...
I don't know. Maybe you should have figured this out beforehand. This is going to quickly become
It's trying to trick me into playing Terminator Genesis Future War.
Okay.
How do I get past that? Okay, exit. Okay, here we go. New game. Here we go. All right. Shining Force 3. I'm not familiar with the Shining Force games that much. I never really played them. You can play as Sonic, Tails, or Knuckles. I want to play as Tails. He's not unlocked. Got to play as Sonic. All right. Let's see what this looks like. I want to see what the joystick thing on the right
it's
the left
probably
is.
Gonna be awful. Like every other mobile platforming game. I don't know what you're expecting to be different.
I'm not expecting to be different. I don't know why you're giving me so much fucking shit when I just want to see how this plays. I'm not sure why you're giving me shit. This is the most shit you've given me on a topic in a while. Okay. The left side you get a little control okay.
Because you don't understand the appeal of...
I understand the appeal. I'm just saying it's a little misguided, that's all. It's a lot of work for not a lot of gain, is all I'm saying, Ian. You know what?
It's a nice move.
It's
a nice thing for Sega to do.
You know what? So far, this isn't awful. It's in widescreen, which is interesting, but it's not stretched out, which is cool.
It's overly ambitious, I think, is the biggest
problem.
Well,
yes. That's
the largest
There's no
problem.
Way in hell you're going to see every Sega game on here.
No.
There's just no fucking way. They're going to run out of steam after a year when they realize that, hey, we're not making any money off of this. This is not worth the time to do this.
And that I could agree with 100%. I just don't think there's a problem with
you know what?
Dying.
You know what? Screw you, Ian, because I'm going to be positive. This is not controlling as bad as I thought it would.
There you go.
This is not... The joystick is not awful. It's only... Bleck.
When we were on the phone earlier, like, it's going to be crap, they're devaluing their game,
hey, don't,
et cetera,
hey,
et cetera.
Hey, don't pull the curtain back. This is the first time we're talking about these topics.
Okay.
Don't pull back the curtain, Ian.
Sorry.
Don't break the fourth wall.
All right, but I think we've gotten everything we can get out of this. So
all right, okay, it wasn't awful. It wasn't as bad as 1942. I played like 5 years ago at Comic-Con, which was just unplayable. All right,
Mahjong.
Ian, you fucking love Mahjong.
I do, and I feel like I need to stress this again. Mahjong is not the Windows game where you remove tiles from a shape that looks like a turtle.
I remember it being shaped like a turtle.
Or any shape. The most common shape for Shanghai is called the turtle. Mahjong is a... Just think of it as a card game played with tiles.
Sure, like Pai Gow or something.
I'm not going to get into the rules of it. I'm not even going to try to explain it. But yes, I absolutely adore the game.
You need to match similar tiles? Is that what you do in Mahjong?
It's kind of... And this isn't even close, but it's more like a mix of poker and gin rummy.
Okay.
So, one of the rarest games is Mahjong for the NES in Hong Kong. It's an actual
one of the rarest Mahjong games, or one of the rarest NES games.
Just one of the rarest games.
One of the rarest games. One of the rarest mainstream published games.
Games, I mean, period. And so, of course, this has to be my holy grail.
Because you collect Mahjong games because you're insane. Yes. Because
I'm insane.
Yes.
I have a lot of them.
This is so... This almost didn't make a certain NES guidebook because I was like, what the fuck? There's Mahjong on the NES? I didn't hear about it. I was like, what the fuck is this game when I'm doing the book? In this special game section, I put it because it's like, well, it didn't come out anywhere else. And this is so rare that there's like less than 10 copies that are known to exist. Like yeah. Something ridiculously low.
It's very low. So this is a graded copy. 80 plus whatever. And it's going for $29,999.
Australian dollars. It's only 23,000 US. Is that a sealed copy? It's a qualified. It's not even a sealed copy.
No.
It's a you know, the blue box Hong Kong version NES cart. It's that lighter gray cart. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, they definitely look different.
I don't think I have one near me. No. I don't think I own a Hong Kong NES cart. But it's just you can play on the Famicom. It's a dollar Famicom game. You can play on the Famicom. It was an early Famicom release.
I have multiple copies
so
of it.
It's just so weird because they must have made like 300 of these. Like for some reason, they didn't make any of them. I couldn't get any information on it. I actually reached out to an author who worked on, there's this obscure video game, it's like Video Games Around the World book that was done by a university professor, and he got people to contribute from all over the world, like even video gaming in Antarctica, the history, it was on every continent, I think that was the name of the book. I reached out to the author, he put me in touch with the guy that wrote the Hong Kong portion of the book,
mm-hmm.
And I was even talking to him, I was trying to ask, when did this game come out, and how... Give me details about this. And there's no information. There's not even good information about, like, under what circumstances, at least what I could find, the Hong Kong NES version, what fucking year it came out. Because in my book I put, like, 85, but it's like it could have been 86, 87. I have no clue. Because it's weird because Hong Kong is obviously not too far from from Japan, but they didn't have the Famicom. They had the Hong Kong NES.
Right.
So it's a weird market.
Well... And I don't even know if it's a wild theory. I just don't know if it's accurate. My history of, I'm not fully brushed up on my history of Mahjong. Mahjong's an ancient game. I mean, it's been played for a long time. But the traditional rules of Mahjong and the Japanese rules of Mahjong are different. And around the time that the NES came out, and the NES or the Famicom game Mahjong came out. The standardized rules that are used in Japan, all over today, known as Ricci Mahjong, were really just starting to become codified and become like the standard set of rules played in Japan. And that's what Nintendo used for their Mahjong games was
so what year was that, that codified rules?
I think they started in the late, like, 70s. They started, developing these Ricci rules.
So that doesn't help Well, it still came out earlier.
So give me a second. Okay. So they started to kind of, the Ricci rule started to get developed in the late 70s. They weren't necessarily, I don't believe, used all the way by the time the Mahjong game would have come out. However, there's a different set of rules that are used elsewhere in the world outside of Japan. So if it's the same game, which it is, released in Hong Kong, they wouldn't have been using the same rules of play as Japanese players would have been using.
Okay.
And while the game is very similar, it's also very different in how it plays and how you have to have certain hands and you have to have certain conditions met in your hand. It's a bit more complex of a game using the Japanese rules. So it may not have sold well because it's not exactly the Mahjong they would have known. That's my best guess as to why.
But the Famicom one you can find dirt cheap, though.
Right? That's what I'm saying. They might not have printed as many copies for the Hong Kong version because it's different rules than they would have played by.
Oh, I see. In Hong Kong itself. Yeah. I see.
And that's my only guess as to why it would have
been. Maybe they realized after they printed something, oh, no one's going to buy this version
because
no one plays
it. Using slightly different rules.
Versus what they would in Japan.
Because it should have been. I mean, if it was just Mahjong, all used the same rules, it would have been
a big seller.
It should have sold like wildfire.
Well, this is why it's so fucking weird. Because even on the VGA authentication, it says 1983 Nintendo NES. I don't think the fucking Hong Kong NES came out in 83.
No,
pretty sure Japan was worried about just rolling out that good old Famicom.
Yeah.
And it's like three games they had on it the first year.
Right.
Like this is why this is so intriguing, this game, to me. And of course, Nintendo. I could just fucking ask Nintendo. Someone at Nintendo probably would know. They probably would have the records. Then again, we still don't know what the fuck went on with Steam events in terms of what if they actually recalled it or not or whatever else. So maybe we don't know, or they don't know. They don't give a shit about the records anymore. But someone has to know why there's not many of these games out there.
Like I said, that's just my theory.
That's your theory why they didn't make that many.
The rules would be at the time the rules would have been different, and in transition, the rules would be becoming different for Japan. As opposed to the rest.
But it would be difficult to do a small print run of cartridge games. It just would be. Because when you talk to guys like Howard Phillips, they said, like, the minimum run was usually at least a few thousand on a game. Like,
sure.
5,000. Like, you couldn't just make 40 of them. It would be worth the trouble. It would cost too much per game to, like, go through that.
Maybe they did do a couple thousand and people didn't take to it because of differing rules. And they just...
They toss them into the Pacific?
I don't know.
They're all gone? Is there a warehouse?
It's not like there was preservation back then.
True, but again, you see all these other tons of games out there. You even can find all these pirated NES carts from that region.
I mean, that's fair. I just...
And it's like,
I don't know.
It's not like you can't find the other NES Hong Kong games. You can find them.
Yeah.
I can buy them all right now if I want to. You can find them. It's just that this is so weird. Like, we know someone that knows someone that has at least one of them.
Yep.
And they were looking to find it here in the U.S. I think at a flea market or swap meet. So check out this auction. It says
I want it.
You're gonna fucking arm wrestle me for it.
Do you give a fuck about a Mahjong game?
it's
hard to find.
It's a unique NES game I don't have. What do you mean? That's intriguing to me. That's not intriguing to you at all. You don't care about that. You just want to play. You want to spend $20,000 to play a Mahjong game you can play for $1.
No, it's a unique, intriguing Mahjong game. That's why I want it.
No, it's not. You can play the Famicom version and be done with
it. It's still unique.
All right. Okay.
I'll fight you.
All right, fine.
We'll fight.
We're going to fight for the death. Let us know in the comments who should get the game. Pat or Ian, who should get... I swear to God, one of us gets donated because... I found... Or someone just finds 50 of them laying around. Someone's going to start looking around Hong Kong in an old warehouse for them and finds like 100 of them. It's going to be like seal statements all over again, but the Hong Kong version. Ian, we're going to roll right into that scumbag.
Sellers. Of the week.
I feel weak. This is a Nintendo World Championship auction.
It's delightful.
Why is it delightful, Ian?
Because it's so blatantly fucking fake, it's ridiculous, but also the story behind it is great.
Well, someone bid on it at $25,000, but it's already been relisted at only $1,000. Oh, the story gets better. I'm so glad we're doing this.
Yeah. So, let's
go over the original auction.
So,
this is Doctor with a K _ G-Van.
I know like nothing whatsoever about this game. It was in my older sister's closet for nearly 2 decades. I had to go through a lot. of effort to talk her out of not burning it in the furnace with all of the other NES games she didn't want. She didn't believe how much it was worth. I have no way to verify anything beyond what I seen online. This appears to be the contest cartridge from Nintendo Nintendo Power Magazine. Somewhat rare, I would say. Somewhat rare, he thinks. With a, you know, a, yeah, whatever.
Somewhat rare, but he was asking $25,000 for it.
Yeah. And then, okay, then we go into
so what's the
whole story.
Okay, but let's just look at this cartridge. It's a gold Nintendo World Championships cart, right?
Yeah.
When you look closely, though, the dip switch section,
like blue,
it's the wrong color.
Yeah.
So it's blue. So first off, it's wrong, right there. But I'm sure if you look closer, I'm not sure if that was like a, like the rest of it was like pasted on or something underneath it to try to mimic the ROM board. But I don't think it's the right ROM board underneath. So
I'm going to doubt that the switches are actually there.
But then,
are real. I mean, you can't even get a solid look at them.
You can buy little micro switch things like that, like, and just paste it on.
That's what I'm saying.
But then you look at the actual logo. It's all wrong. It's not the cheap dot matrix cutout paper. It actually almost looks clear.
It looks silk screened or clear.
So they put more. This guy put more production value into this fake than Nintendo did when they made the 26 promo cartridge, which I think is funny.
Yeah,
it actually looks sort of. That looks like a better. That looks like a label that he downloaded the picture from online off of like a Hot Topic T-shirt. Yeah. Like he took a better label
with the transparency still involved in it,
something like that, and then threw it on there, right?
Uh-huh.
And then there's this fake ass fucking card included with the auction. You see this card?
Actually, I did not.
You see the card?
No.
Nintendo World Championships. This hereby certifies that. In blank has successfully competed in the 1990 Nintendo World Championships.
Oh yeah,
officially certified by Mario, and then there's a fake Howard Phillips signature. So this is bullshit. Just because if you got it in the mail, you didn't compete in the Nintendo World Championships. It was just mailed to you from the fucking contest. See how stupid this is. But this person's putting in so much work to fake this. They're trying to outsmart the room.
Yeah.
Is what the saying goes.
Uh-huh.
And that makes it more of a fakery and just more of a bullshit item. But then it was just relisted, which I didn't know before the podcast. So on the relist, the label is missing and the case is scratched a bit. So they realized that they were called out on the fact that the label's bullshit.
And like, it gets so dramatic too. At the very end, a long, long time ago, during an era we still remember, Nintendo held a contest for people who really liked their games. Now I present to you that game.
Great. So on the relist, they're trying to pretend that this is a second one, because it says, here we have what appears to be another contest cartridge from Nintendo Power Magazine. Somewhat rare, so I am to understand the label's missing and the case is scratched a bit. So this is just fucking garbage. If you want to get a real one, there's actually a real one right now on eBay at $100,000. Or make an offer. I'm not saying that's going to sell for that much, but there is a real one on, and you can compare a real one to a fake one. So,
Doctor or Ivan?
Doctor, is it Ivan?
I think it's Dr. Ivan.
Or a J. Doctor _ J Van or Ivan, whatever the fuck your name is, and your awful.
The fake... doctor is a K, by the way. Doctor with a K.
Your fake NWC gold, it's one of the worst fakes I ever saw, but you put way too much work in to begin with. For that, you are the scumbag seller of the week. Ian?
Yes?
You open crates of loot every once in a while, don't you?
Yeah, once in a while.
You've seen other people. You've seen Vonnie open her crates of loot.
I watch you open your crates of loot.
It's a solid product.
It is.
It's a geek box delivered to your door every month for a low price.
With goodies.
That are exclusive. Like, now everything's... It used to be, like, one thing... Now, like, everything's exclusive in them.
Yeah. Everything you get is exclusive. You get cool t-shirts.
I was wearing the Goonies t-shirt, I think, the last podcast.
Yeah, that
Goonies
Never Said Die. Probably one of the coolest t-shirts we've seen come out of a Loot Crate box. They're all pretty damn cool.
They're all pretty good. You may not prefer that franchise, but they're all, like, well-made.
Yes.
And they're all exclusive. So, be the envy of your friends and get 100% exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/Pat. Enter code Pat. To save 10% on any new subscription. July's Loot Crate theme, Ian?
Hit me.
I guess you didn't look at the read beforehand. It's animation!
Yay! Okay.
You'll find items from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Bob's Burgers, Futurama, and Rick and Morty, which just announced that third season coming back.
Nice.
Soon. And one lucky subscriber will win that Mega Crate, which is, like, I think it's like a $500 value. It's ridiculous. You have until the 19th of July, we're in July already, at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive the animation crate. And when that cutoff happens, that's it. You're done. You're going to try for the next month to see what it's going to be. So, again, go to lootcrate.com/Pat. Enter the code Pat to save 10%. You also can try Loot Pets as well.
I'm just noticing Loot Pets here.
Is Spike going to get some Loot Pets action?
I have a feeling if Bonnie finds out about this.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Spike might be humiliated in front of... about 10,000 people on Twitter.
Please don't put clothes on your cat. Please don't do that.
I argue against it.
That's so demeaning.
Vonnie argues for it.
Okay. Anyway. And then Ian, you are a fan of the blue apron.
I am. Especially ever since I've become ill. It makes dinners and lunches very easy for Vonnie and I. We do the 2 4-person meals a week. Not every week, but most weeks. This past week we did, chicken parmesan was a really good one. And it was good because chicken parmesan is basic, but they send you extremely good ingredients.
Is Ian trying to explain what Blue Apron is right now? He's getting
right. Sorry, I was getting too into the food because the food's high quality. They sent really good mozzarella. So, anyways, okay. Blue Apron is the mozzarella is so good. They send you everything you need to create meals at home.
They send you recipes and food. They send you everything to make your meals,
and you make them. These are not prepackaged meals.
Fresh ingredients,
fresh vegetables. I believe
meats.
It's local. The meat is generally sourced locally, and It's designed with cooking together in mind. So it is aimed at families as well. Everyone can do something.
They support sustainable food systems. They work with their partnership with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. So that's cool.
And the way they divide up the recipe cards, there's multiple tasks that can be done. So there's stuff that parents can do, stuff that kids can do. And the meals come together very quickly and very easily.
It's under $10 per person per meal. And like that's cheaper than a restaurant. And it's high quality stuff.
Yes.
I've made 5 or 6 meals with them. Never disappointed. The salmon meal was good. The pork, medallions, meal was good. The meatball fucking sandwich was like Mutta used to make. It was actually really good.
That was actually one of the ones that really fucking surprised me.
Yeah. I was like, come on, meatball sandwich. Come on. I'm an Italian here. Come on. But I was like, no, this was tasty. And Frank liked it too. It was like a meatball parm sandwich. That was
awesome.
Really good.
So yeah, So
you can sign up and you can get this week's menu. Check it out and you can get your first 3 meals free, huh? With free shipping by going to blueapron.com/CU podcast. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. And did you know that I'm just looking at it. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So there you go. You kind of like your wife or husband. You don't like your kids. This will bring you all together. Blue Apron. And it's good meals. Again, that's blueapron.com/CU podcast for your first 3 meals free with free shipping. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
It's never been easier for me to sell a sponsor. Okay.
Ian, now this is an interesting Hyperkin peripheral that was announced.
Yes.
It sort of came out of left field, and I was like, huh, this isn't exactly... It's interesting because every once in a while you'll see this stuff like the Game Boy attachment for your smartphone, which still is coming out later this year. But this is something you can use like right now that could appeal to some people, but we're not sure who.
Yeah. So Hyperkin is releasing a mouse for the Super Nintendo.
A third-party mouse.
A third-party mouse to make them more easy to come by. They're not exactly expensive on the used market, but they're also not always readily available.
Probably not in the best shape always either. Are they?
No, they're not. Although, you can clean them and stuff, but they're, I don't think people realize that there is actually
a number of games outside of, you know, Mario Paint that people can play. Where in the store, I think most people, the only other games that people actively seem to know that you can use it with are King Arthur's whatever, because that's supposed to be a pretty good game. And King Arthur's World and Civilization. But there are a number of other games that it can be used
with. We can go through them. We'll go through the U.S. ones here on the list here, because it's more than I thought. It's probably between, if you look at Japanese and U.S. games, you're looking at something about 40 to 50. But just U.S. looks like it's more like 20 to 30. You have Acme Animation Factory, Advanced D&D Eye of the Beholder, Arkanoid, Dota again, which makes sense. You can move quickly left and right.
So
that's actually pretty
fast, yeah.
a pretty good idea. Breakthrough, I'm not familiar with that. Cannon Fodder, that's a PAL-only game. I don't think I've ever played that before. I don't think I've seen that.
On the ball, which is, that makes sense actually, because you want to be able to rotate fast or slow on that one.
Sure. Doom, first person shooter, makes sense. Fun and Games, Lord of the Rings Volume 1. Jurassic Park, I'm guessing for the first person section?
I would guess, yeah, because I can't think of where else you would use it.
King Arthur's World, which you brought up. Lamborghini American Challenge, maybe the drive? Lemmings 2 makes sense, point and click.
Yep.
Mario Paint, which is the only way you can get the damn thing in the U.S. Mario's Early Years, Preschool Fun. Might and Magic 3, which, that's a computer game, that would be helpful.
Yeah, same with the Dungeons & Dragons, that makes total sense as well.
Nobunaga's Ambition, it's a strategy game, a hell of a lot easier than using a crosshair on a controller.
And then like a lot of the arcade shooting games that didn't necessarily support the Super Scope, like Revolution X, Terminator 2, the arcade game.
Operation Thunderbolt, which I didn't know until like 2 years ago, was on the Super Nintendo. That's a hard-to-find game. Pieces, let's see what else you got here. Qian's Revenge, is that a Mahjong game?
Shanghai. Both of the Shanghais, I guess, which are Japan only. Use it, which is the puzzle Mahjong game.
Okay.
And then Xian's Revenge, I'm guessing, is a strategy game. Sid Meier's Civilization makes perfect sense. Some Ant makes sense. Knowing this now, and I think if people actually take the time to look at it...
Oh, Xian's Revenge is a first-person viewpoint as a player aims a cursor at enemies that throw shurikens or slash with a dagger. That's like Super Spy for Neo Geo. That sounds really fucking cool.
Yeah, that's neat. I didn't know that. I think if people actually look through this list now that this is being released, I think there might be somewhat of a resurgence in interest in the mouse.
Vegas
because
Stakes.
A lot of these games Wolf's would Hunter benefit from mouse control.
Yeah.
I mean, Eye of the Beholder is a great game. I wouldn't necessarily want to play it with a controller, but with a mouse, absolutely. Might and Magic 3, for sure. If you're going to play Civ on the Super Nintendo, definitely would rather do that with a mouse.
I wonder if this announcement alone... It was sort of the marketing plea to be like, okay, people like us to look into the full list and be surprised by some of the choices. To be like, oh, I need to get my mouse out if I don't have one.
Right.
Or go and buy it. But for $20, though, that's not a bad price, I don't think, for that. But you can find the mice fairly easily still.
Yeah, I mean, we sell Mario Paint with the mouse and the pad for $20, and it sells all day. So
right now, if I search for SNES mouse on eBay, there's 260 listings.
There you go.
$10 free shipping, $22 with Mario Paint, $20 with Mario Paint and the pad. You don't find the pad as often as the actual mouse. $18 with the game. So if you take that game,
I think that's about average. Is $20 for the mouse in the game.
$16 just the mouse with free shipping. So I guess the choice is going to be, do you want a 25-year-old peripheral that could be banged up, or you get a new one for $20?
And we sell we sell the Mario Paint cartridge for $2. So a new mouse and the Mario Paint cartridge for $22,
it's in the ballpark,
I think,
right?
I honestly don't think that's bad.
$15, yeah, I mean... You'll be able to help me if you go to a flea market. You can find them for $3. It's not like these costs
are
a lot, or you'll find them in a. Well, then again, I'm trying to think. When I went to the last convention, did I find any by themselves? Probably like in a box of controllers, or you usually find it with Mario Paint there. So it's not. I mean, it's not a terrible idea. It's just, I guess, either this will create a mini resurgence in the retro gaming community. Like, it's almost like they've created a problem that most retro gamers didn't know existed,
and are trying to, you know, sort of, you know, fill that hole. That they're now alert. It's like they're punching the hole in the wall. Say, hey, there's that hole. You didn't know it was there before. Or pointing out, oh, now I got to play Revolution X on my Super Nintendo with a mouse. You know, it's like.
And it also makes a lot of games that I like Camel Tree, which was called On the Ball in the U.S. that I like, but could never fathom playing with a controller or Arkanoid Dode again. Like,
now
that I know that I could use a mouse for those, I would actually go back and try those again.
I think the one caveat here that no one's really taking into account, how are you going to play it? Like where are you going to play with a mouse pad? You're not usually on a traditional computer game.
Right, because,
playing
at this point, we're also used to optical mice, and this is obviously not going to be an optical mouse.
But even still, like, if you're on you're on your regular couch, we're going to put on your knee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, with an optical mouse, that actually wouldn't be a problem, but probably isn't.
But even still, it's though. Even an optical mouse on your knee was not going to be comfortable. Like, it's not going to be as precise. You can get away with it.
Yeah, I deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. Wait a second. How is that going to happen? They probably.
Well, we all fucking did it back in the day.
We didn't. There was no one fucking used the mouse back in the day.
I played Mario Paint.
Yes, you played Mario Paint.
Yeah, and used the pad.
This doesn't have a pad, though.
You make one. You take a fucking book off the shelf.
What, did you sit down at the coffee table? You used to put it on there and play like that?
You just rested the pad on your leg.
I think they're missing out here. I think they should have done a little contraption that, folded up, on your belly and placed the mouse on there. Anyway.
All right.
Well, Ian, there's a lot of video game movies in development. Various forms. They're going through with that Rampage movie with The Rock. They're actually filming the damn thing.
Yeah, fuck it.
They're not going to be humans that transform. They're actually going to be just like a wolf that changes to a werewolf and a lizard into Lizzie.
Right.
You know, why couldn't you keep, there's nothing about Rampage. There's it's so thin, the story. Why not keep it? Anyway, we're going to go through all the video games in development
right
now.
Let's just go through this quick. There's 25 of them.
We're going to first say, one, is it actually going to come out in theaters? Two, if it comes out, would it actually be a success? Or you know what I mean? That's what we're going to go through right now. Okay.
Tomb Raider reboot.
Okay, well, they're making it. I can see the lady right there.
Yep, that'll work.
You think people will see that?
Yeah.
You think so?
The Angelina Jolie ones did fine.
Sure. I mean, we had the two reboot games. We had the two original movies. I think the second movie of Angelina Jolie didn't bomb, but it didn't do as well. I've seen parts of it on TV. So you think this will do decently? Okay, we'll say that'll do decently. Rampage, there we go.
That picture
now
is
production,
awful. No.
Starring Dwayne Watson, Naomi Harris, Malin Ackerman, Joe Manganiello, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. I like the cast. I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He's fantastic. Feature a gorilla, wolf, and lizard turning into larger, monstrous versions of themselves, and then Rock taking off his shirt halfway through the movie. I'll just say that. That's going to come out, and that's going to be, I think, not laughed at. That's going to be like, what the fuck is this? And why is this a movie?
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough getting people into the theaters for these Godzilla movies, I think, and for the new King Kong movies. And this is just what is this? I think this is going to be not necessarily a stinker, but I think no one's going to want to see this.
It's going to be shit.
You think it's going to be shit?
Yeah.
Well, the Baywatch movie just came out. It was critically just fucking horribly panned and made no money. So The Rock isn't always attached to successful movies. Minecraft, set for May 24, 2019. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is Rob McElhenney is directing, which I think is interesting. Steve Carell eyed to headline the film. So is this going to do well in the theaters, or is it a little bit too late, or is it going to be Angry Birds, or it's not going to matter, it's going to appeal to kids anyway?
It's going to be garbage. I don't know how you make a movie out of Minecraft. It's going to do gangbusters because kids.
Well, Angry Birds got decent reviews, and how do you make a movie out of that, you know, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, it's like the Lego movie. You can do whatever the fuck you want. It's Minecraft's fucking Legos, right? So it's a Lego movie. But it's Minecraft.
Yeah, but
it'll do gangbusters.
But there's no.
They'll make up a random.
There's no
plot.
History of good Lego stuff behind it in terms of storytelling or. Fuck it.
Okay. Right.
The Angry Birds movie too.
That'll do well. The first one did well, of course. It made a ton of money. Detective Pikachu.
It better fucking do great, and I can't wait.
I don't know though, that's ever going to come out. You think that's actually going to come out?
Rob Letterman of Goosebumps is directing the first live-action Pokemon movie, which hails from Legendary Entertainment.
I hope it does. I think of all the fucking movies on here, this has a chance.
I'm not saying this wouldn't be good. I'm not sure this is actually going to come out.
Well, I hope it does.
Uncharted.
Eat me.
Long in development. It's going to be Tom Holland as young Nathan Drake. Oh, it's a prequel. Okay. I don't think this is going to come out. I think by the time they get this going, people are going to be like, we don't give a shit anymore about Uncharted. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
The same thing that happened with just with Assassin's Creed. No one gave a shit.
Yeah.
It's like, it should have came out 10 years ago. It's too late. Okay, I don't think it's going to get made. Sonic the Hedgehog. Deadpool director Tim Miller is producing the live-action CGI hybrid. If this comes out, this will fucking bomb. I think. I do not think this will do well. The fact that it's going to be a live-action CGI hybrid, who the fuck wants to see that?
I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that this will probably come out, though.
You think this is going to come out?
I do.
I will say this will not get... They're going to say this is a horrible idea. It's not going to come out, I think. Mortal Kombat.
I think that's a shoe-in for another movie.
You think so?
Especially with the popularity of X.
They've been trying to get a third one in forever, though. Fuck,
I mean, now would be the time.
You know what? This has poorly received feature films. That first film was fucking good. I'm sorry. That movie was...
I don't remember the first one being poorly received, and it certainly was it certainly became a cult classic in terms of kind of dopey movies, but if you talk to anyone, it's commonly cited as probably the best video game movie.
It was the best of the 90s,
yeah.
For sure. I mean, that or the Double Dragon movie from the 90s. You know, what are you gonna do? For anything else, you can say, yeah, it wasn't as violent. It was pretty fucking faithful to the story and to the characters. And that was good enough. And it was decent martial arts action.
It followed the plot. It was every fighting tournament movie ever made, because that's all Mortal Kombat 1 wanted
was,
to be.
Yes, all was Enter the Dragon.
Yes.
Liu Kang is basically, Bruce Lee. Okay, so that's going to get... You think it's going to get made? Okay. Five Nights at Freddy's.
I don't know. The guy just canceled his sixth game.
Is he burnt out?
I think he's burnt out, and I think probably fans are burnt out, and I'm not sure that this
six
is
six games in how many years?
Not a long time.
It's like one a year?
And I don't think that's counting the MMO he did, which I don't think did very well.
I don't think this is going to get made. And if it got made, I think it would bomb horribly.
I think you could potentially make it a movie just from what I've heard about the script, but I don't think it's going to get made. And I think it would probably bomb, because by that time people are probably burning out on it.
Sure. Monster Hunter. Following this conclusion of Resident Evil series, filmmaker Paul W.S. Anderson is setting his sights on another franchise with Monster Hunter. I don't think this gets made.
Monster Hunter generally doesn't have a deep enough story to turn into a movie. I don't think it gets made.
Plus, it'd be too expensive to make this. This isn't like a Resident Evil movie. A lot of those I did like pretty fairly cheaply.
Sure.
What's going to reboot that too, I think? Oh, Resident Evil. They're going to reboot it and actually make
path.
It.
Well, why are we even talking about it?
They're going to do it. They're going to do it.
Okay, great.
They've made seven of them. They're all successful to various degrees. They're going to reboot it. Sleeping Dogs, Donnie Yen, who I love, of Rogue One and Ip Man, will play the hero cop of the Square Enix adaptation, going undercover to take down a criminal organization. Yeah, they'll make it. It'll come out in China. It'll barely come out here, probably. Why not?
No director or release date are attached to a game that originally came out on the 360 and PS3 2 years ago.
I can picture though coming out, because you know there's a big the Chinese mafia. There's a lot of movies about that. I can see
them. Yeah, they'll film it and call it something else, though.
You think so?
Attaching the Sleeping Dog's name to it at this point is pointless.
You think so? Okay. I think this will get made at some point. Donnie Yen's pretty... He's like one of the biggest Chinese stars.
Gears of War, probably, maybe.
I don't think... If they're having trouble doing Call of Duty, I don't see a Gears of War movie.
Yeah, and they're having trouble doing Halo, so probably not.
I don't see Gears of War being made.
Last of Us.
I mean, what is it? It's just a fucking...
I don't know. I've never played it.
Zombie movie in paradise?
Not really, but I don't know. Call of Duty, really don't think it's going to happen. We talked about Activision Studios ages ago, and they're still not on it.
Well, I heard that they wanted to do like a... holy shit, they want to do a cinematic universe.
Yeah.
With Modern Warfare. Okay, so they're going to do like 1 year, do Black Ops. Like they're going to follow the game releases, Black Ops, Modern Warfare. Then they go back to do like a fucking World War II one. Is that they will do a Call of Duty movie? They're going to do it. I guarantee they're going to do it. They're going to be shocked by how little it makes versus the video games.
Oh sure,
that's what I think is going to happen. It'll be like, oh, generic war film. Great. Rabbids, hybrid live action stop motion feature. has been in development. That does not get made. Stop motion. You know how fucking difficult that is and how time consuming that is?
At this fucking point, I'm not going to put anything past the Rabbids. I say this has a shot.
Shot to get made? You think it'd be well received? Because we like seeing our stop motion movie once every 4 years that comes out.
If it's legit stop motion, I would actually maybe go see it just because I love stop motion.
All right, maybe this comes out and it's a hit.
Portal Half-Life. No, they can't even finish the fucking Half-Life series.
That's not, yeah, they're not going to do that instead of doing, unless that's the movie, the movie's Half-Life 3.
And the first Portal is about 3 hours from start to finish anyways, so, I mean, it is a movie, and Portal 2 is about 8 hours. I don't see that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Okay.
Shinobi? No.
Bridge of Spies producer Mark Platt, I still have to see the Bridge of Spies, supposed to be good. Set up an adaptation. Hoping to make a film that honors the essence of the games. Yeah, it's a ninja movie. I mean, that's the essence of... I mean, yeah. Okay, I don't see that happening. The Division.
The Division would have been far better off as a movie. I don't know if it's going to be made into a movie or if it will be successful.
Stephen Godkin of Syriana, which is an excellent film, is set to direct the feature adaptation of Open World Shooter, which has Jake Gyllenhaal and Jessica Chastain set to star. Well, it has two stars. You know what? Fuck it. They'll make this movie.
I mean,
they'll make it.
I don't know that I'll see it, but I feel like it would have been better as a movie.
I think this will do okay. This because it's a different setting. It's not like just doing a fucking Call of Duty movie. I think it'll do okay. Splinter Cell. Tom Hardy has been attached to this feature film for many years now with Doug Liman previously directing.
It's not happening. The Splinter Cell series popularity started on Xbox and waned and died on the 360 and PS3.
So it's not going to get made.
It's not happening.
Metal Gear Solid. Kong Skull Island filmmaker Jordan Volk Roberts is attached to direct the film.
Was it going
to
be fucking 25 hours long? No.
You don't think it's going to get made?
No.
I think the expectations would be too high, and people are like, what the fuck is this? Just Cause. Aquaman himself, Jason Momoa, will play Rico Rodriguez from Just Cause 3, which has Rampage director Brad Peyton attached to direct. Brad Peyton's directed Rampage? Oh, wow. You know what? I'll be crazy and say this gets made. Just because Jason Momoa will be hot off of Aquaman, and they'll say, fuck it, we'll try another action win with him, and then no one will see it. Firewatch. Okay.
Great game. Greatly reviewed game, but the game. This is the type of game that is developed to play out solely as a story.
So unless
there's no reason to do it as a movie.
Because you'd have to remake the actual game, like, step for step. And
right.
Then what, put it in first person
at that point? And then cut parts out.
Okay, so that's not getting made.
No.
Centipede and Missile Command.
Suck my dick. No, that's it. We're moving on. And Tetris.
And Tetris is the one they're trying to make into a trilogy. That's right. Producer Larry Kasanoff, who previously made the Mortal Kombat film, is attached to bring the Tetris game to life. It's going to be a trilogy. No, that's not going to happen. They're not going to get the fucking funding to actually make that, or else maybe I'll eat crow and they'll make $1 billion. It'll be special. All right, Han Solo, Ian, is going to be directed by someone new. Does that sound familiar or kind of familiar? There was a lot of trouble with Rogue One in terms of the reshoots, and then they reshot like half the movie. It looked like based upon the trailers and what people were saying, and now. For the second standalone film, Star Wars film, there's some trouble that's brewed.
Well, first of all, I feel like this Han Solo...
I don't want to see it. I have no
interest. I will not see this.
And he's my favorite Star Wars character, and I have this much interest.
He's not my favorite. He's a good character, but I have no interest in seeing this. I just don't need... I find him to be a fairly... thin character, and I don't think...
Oh, he's not thin. I think Luke Skywalker's a lot thinner than Han Solo.
Okay, that's fair, too. I mean, I like Star Wars, but really when
they're all archetypes.
They're all archetypes.
So basically what happened was you had a tandem director of Christopher Miller and Phil Lord who were brought on board, and then a good chunk away through, they completed a good part of the movie. They filmed it. Lawrence Kasdan decided... behind the scenes that they're not right for this. This does not feel like a Star Wars film. It's basically the short end of it. This does not feel like what this should be.
Really? No shit. You hired two guys who are known for comedy to direct a movie about a guy who he's not a comedic fucking character. I mean, he's sarcastic, but he's
He's not equipped.
This is not goofy slapstick.
This isn't Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
You know, this isn't that sort of tone. What's interesting about this is that Gareth Edwards, who originally directed Rogue One, when they brought in people to help him out to finish it, he was all on board with it. There was no problem. Here it seems like there was a lot of friction.
Yes.
And so Lawrence Kasdan came on set, and Lawrence Kasdan's like the best keeper of Star Wars we have left.
Yeah.
Empire Strikes Back. You know, he basically helped make Empire Strikes Back as awesome as it was. Lucas was sort of like in the background.
Yeah.
And so he comes on set, and all the stories that he was trying to get them, they just wanted to film the script. Just film the script. I wrote the fucking... My son wrote this fucking thing with my help. Film the script. And they like, begrudgingly filmed what was there, but then had him just... They wanted to have the actors ad-lib, which for Star Wars is fucking strange.
Yes.
The ad-lib. That's really strange.
Not an ad-lib movie.
You know, that's like... I can't picture a fantasy film like Lord of the Rings having ad-libs in it. It's all like... it's all like... We're going somewhere. It's very structured. Let's not get off the beaten path. And the other problem was that it was taking them so long to set up shots and they weren't getting the coverage. Coverage means you have the appropriate number of angles in order to actually edit the fucking scene together. Right. Not just have two or three. Sometimes you have four, five, or six. So you can cover up holes, or if you have to cut lines of dialogue, you know, so it's not like an amateur film. So they're off the film. Like, they're unlike Gareth Edwards, who stayed on. So they're off it.
Right.
So they're bringing in Ron Howard. Which is interesting because Lucas directed him in American Graffiti.
Yes.
And Ron Howard's now a big-time director. And he's going to come back and try to, I guess, reshoot a chunk of this, most likely. See what actually is there that works. But this is not good for the first two standalone Star Wars movies. They're having this much of issues. And remember, the third standalone movie, Josh Trank was fucking kicked off, and that was basically canceled for now.
God,
remember that? It was going to do like the Boba Fett movie or whatever the hell? That's gone. So for some reason there's been this huge disconnect between the quote unquote saga movies, which so far have been running like clockwork, and everyone's been, all right, this is good, and The Last Jedi looks good so far, versus these standalones. I'm guessing that they want these standalones to be different, and so they're wanting to take these risks. But when they're actually seeing the results, they're like, holy shit, whoa, let's back up. We got to be more. We have to have a little more care with this universe, and I'm guessing that's what's happening when it's coming to these films. So, unfortunately, we didn't see that quote-unquote, like, hardcore. I still liked Rogue One a lot.
I still need to see it.
But I wonder what that original one would have been. Maybe less fun. Maybe less fan service in the first cut of that movie. Maybe more gritty. Maybe even a darker ending, if you can imagine, for that first...
Haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it yet.
I mean, obviously, I'm fairly certain I know where it goes. But I have a feeling Gareth Edwards would have... His directing has that feel. So, yes, I'm sure it would have probably been
even less hopeful than what we got. Yeah. Because the word was on you heard about the Darth Vader scene in the movie.
Yeah.
The word was that was not originally in there. They put that in.
Yes.
And now that's the only thing people fucking talk about with that movie. It was a great scene. It was unexpected and a surprise. But it was fan service for sure. It was great fan service, but it was like, all right. It was cool to see that, but we didn't necessarily need to see that. So this is still going to, I think going to come out in time this December. Oh, excuse me, not December. This is going to come out, I think, let's see. No, December is The Last Jedi, so this is going to come out next year in May, I believe. So there you have it. We'll see what happens with this. Ron Howard, Opie's going to take the reins, and hopefully we have some good results with it there. Q&A time on the CU podcast. First, we'll do the traditional Q&A, then we'll do our Patreon segment. This is at Dublin Danny. Why do you think there's more interest in retro consoles than retro computers, Ian?
I think that's fairly easy to answer, and I think it's because retro consoles, I think it's why for a long time there was more interest in console games modern-wise as well. A retro console is easier to hook up and still easier to maintain than a retro computer. So even though retro consoles now still need some maintenance and TLC, you're still dealing with discs and cartridges, like CDs or cartridges, which are a lot easier to find in working condition and a lot more durable than floppy disks, if we're going to go into like 80s retro computers and early 90s retro computers.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, some of those
And retro computing is extraordinarily interesting, at least to me. I love the idea of it. I love poking around with it. I love playing with Apple IIs and stuff like that.
They're big and bulky.
They are big and bulky. You know, they take up a lot of space. That's another thing.
You need a monitor, not just a computer.
Right. And sometimes finding the right configuration just to play a certain game, it's not that easy. Some of those games can be particularly picky. I mean, if you want the graphics right and you want the sound right, then you better hope you've got the right sound card and the right setup, and you better hope you've got the time to screw with your setup.
It'll still crash.
Yeah.
Just like the old ones did.
Yep, exactly. So vintage computers and vintage computer gaming on the original hardware can be a lot of fun, and it's something I still do when I go back home with a couple of computers I have in my basement. But it's a much more time-consuming hobby. It's not as pick-up-and-play. And, you know, like Pat said, space, weight. I mean, just transporting that shit around. I mean, it's just, you know, that's a hobby you get into when you own a house with a lot of space and you know you're going to be staying put for a while. It's not a hobby you get into when you're living in an apartment and you know you're going to be moving around and shit like that.
It's hard to find some of those computers that are in working condition.
Yes.
And
if you want to build like a dedicated 486 machine that, you know, that's in really good shape, like you want to hunt for the highest quality components you can find.
Sure. Of course you can go to the swap meet and find beat up ones. You're going to see if they actually work. But if you want to go older,
but
you talk about like, yeah, so you can find Apple IIs. You know how hard it is to just find like fucking like IBM XT?
That's a lot harder.
So that's where, like I went to the swap meet and I saw one. It wasn't the exact one I had as a kid. That I'd have to go online and find the exact one I have with that red toggle switch that went up. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it was a PC. It wasn't a junior, but it was, you know, it was an IBM XT, you know, from like 85. But I just found one. I bought it just because I've found maybe two XTs at the swap meet in like this 8 years I've been here. Yeah, you can find Apple IIs or Commodore 64s. I've found more Timex fucking Sinclairs than XTs. So, one, they're not as sexy. It's not as sexy to say, oh, I'm going to go out and collect for my 486 33 megahertz, which I had, you know, in early high school. But that doesn't mean anything.
Right.
There's no sexiness to that. There's not, like, dedicated games for that computer you had. Those games we played on various types of makes and models, you know, whether it's Tandy or whatever, Gateway 2000, whatever thousand mom-and-pop, you know, computer shops you went to in your Edison, New Jersey computer show. You're like, it's not sexy. It just isn't. The games we played all across multiple computers. So if it came out, especially in the 80s, if it came out on IBM, it probably came out in some version on Amiga and or Atari computer and or, you know, Commodore 64. So, like, it's not quite the same.
Right.
It's a different mindset. It's more about that the experience of playing on a clunky computer versus more so than the game
And I think there's also, I mean, you have to make a difference between something like a Commodore and the Atari computers from what I think this person's talking about, which I think definitely things like once you get into the Apple IIe's and the early IBM's and IBM compatibles and stuff like that, that's a breaking point. Because some of those early computers, like the Commodores and the VICs and stuff like that, and the Atari computers, they act more like consoles.
This is the difference. Like good old games, GOG, when they put out a game for sale, when I see like, okay, they have like, I don't know, TIE Fighter Collector's CD, whatever version that I can easily download and play for whatever, $5.
Packaged with its own self-booting version of DOSBox.
Yes. I click it, I got my joystick, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
That to me is that there's no nostalgia factor with me thinking back on my old ass computer doing the same thing on a new computer with just an updated joystick.
Yeah.
I'm still playing the same game, and the amount of heartache for me to actually replicate the original, no one's going to go out and really do that. Versus it's a lot easier, like I said, getting an NES and buying some games and replicating that experience on any old CRT.
Yep.
This is at AltR1. Okay. Now that Star Fox 2 gets an official release, will it be featured in a certain SNES guidebook? I think you'd have to.
Given that it's an official release, and from what we've heard or from what I've heard from certain people, that it was complete at that time, but not released then, but it is officially being released now, you could argue that it's in that window of, and yes, I mean, you could review it.
I guess what you was argues that would you place it just after Star Fox in the regular section, or put it in the special game section with like Campus Challenge and like the competition cards? Like, that's the only argument I would
probably. I feel like it would just go, it would go in the special section, but I'd say it counts.
Well, Cheetah Men 2 was never released, and that I put that in the regular game section because it, they made it.
Okay. Well, so then, that's the argument. Then yes, it gets to follow. I feel like it gets to follow.
That's the argument.
Cheetah Men 2 rules.
Cheetah Men technically wasn't released.
Yeah.
They made the fucking piece of shit, and they threw him in a warehouse, and it wasn't released until Mike Etler found him. You know what's funny? I was actually browsing on eBay, and I saw Mike Etler's listings. He's still operating. And I said, hey, dude, you mean a lot to us. You know, like, buy you a sandwich, too. Why not?
Yeah, I'll buy Mike Etler, like, fucking 20 sandwiches.
20 sandwiches? Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm working on a Super Nintendo book. Yeah. Ian might work on it too. We're still having negotiations about that.
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Let's do the Patreon questions here.
Hi, my name's Steve Manser from Grand Island, Nebraska. First, I just wanted to say I really appreciate you, Pat, and Ian for your long form podcast. As I'm a semi truck driver by profession, and you've guys helped me kill many, many miles over the years, listening to your 2-hour-long podcast, so I really appreciate it.
Better than hookers.
I just wanted to touch on the topic you mentioned a couple episodes ago regarding 8-Bit Guy's relabeling of retro game cartridges. And I just wanted to say that I'm in favor of this practice. In fact, I have been doing a little bit of relabeling myself, mostly on cheaper games that are just unrecognizable otherwise. I personally would rather pay money for a really good restoration of a cartridge than one that, you know, frankly to me is garbage if I can't even tell what it is looking at it.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, comment. I'd rather spend the good money on an original with a good label. That's just me versus the reproduction label.
Right. And that's my thing as well. If you say it's, you know, being done on the cheaper games, I feel like by the time you buy the reproduction label, scrape the label off the original game and apply it. I mean, if we're really talking cheap games, finding the cheap games tend to be common. Why not just find the original in nice shape?
Oh, there's more to this. Okay.
Oh. I think that the trade should move forward instead of being...
the hobby, I think he means.
Yeah. Pushing this practice aside, I think, as you mentioned before, you know, a relabeled authentic cartridge should have the value right there. I think that's a great way to get started on that because... You know, the longer we go into this trade, I just think there it's inevitable that some of these relabels are going to get out there in the circulation. So, anyways, thanks again.
Okay, so I think we're going to get to that point, but I don't think it's going to be half the value. I think it's going to be a quarter or less than that. Again, it's not end up with comic books where it's like 1% of the value. Or 5% of the value when you have like a destroyed destroyed cover on a comic, they put a repro label, repro cover. I don't think it's going to be that because you can play a game versus like the aesthetic of an old comic book, and the value of actually reading that's gone. Like if you have Amazing Fantasy 15, you're not going to fucking read that. No one's buying that to read that. But people will still buy an old ass game like I don't know a random one. Danny Silva's in the Heat to actually play it.
Yes,
that's the difference. So, to me, it's almost like then maybe I don't know. We have to come up with a way. Maybe it'll be a consortium. Maybe we'll ask me or you to be on it. We can come up with a fucking, you know, like there's a grading guide. You can buy the Overstreet grading guide where it's somewhat, it's structured how you grade a comic book. Maybe we'll get there with video games. And not just a fucking seal, but the actual label, manual, and the game box. I don't know.
And I think that's where it will probably have to end up going. At some point, there will... end up, I mean, if this hobby continues, if the interest in it continues at the rate that it does, if it has the lasting power,
There will have to be some sort of consensus on that. And who's going to do it? I don't know. But, you know, as with all collectibles, coins, comics, toys, eventually there comes a point where every hobby reaches this point where is what's acceptable, what's not, and how are we going to determine the value of things when things are reproduced, replaced, touched up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, no one's talked about touched up yet. No one's even talked about that.
Oh, no.
That's even, yeah.
I'm not talking about, but I'm just saying.
We'll get there, though.
No, but I'm saying in examples, in other hobbies.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, this comes up eventually.
I'm sure we're going to get to the point where people will start touching up game labels and then trying to get a better grade for it or the box. Because we're talking a lot of money. We're talking about, like, if you have a shitty box and then, like, maybe you can press it, you know, like how they press some comic covers to make, like, the wrinkles disappear. You might get there.
Yeah. So, anyways, we can agree to disagree. I mean, I don't agree with the practice, but no. I do think it's inevitable. I mean, I'm not going to be unrealistic. I do think it's inevitable
inevitable.
Shut up. I do think it's inevitable that at some point, you know, there will become kind of a guide or guidelines to how this is handled.
Next question.
Hey, guys. This is Eric from the Retail Archaeology Channel, and I have a question that's probably more for Ian than Pat, but the question is, why do you think GameStop is having so much trouble and having to close stores? And meanwhile, I feel like mom-and-pop game shops are popping up all over the place and need to be doing well. Anyways, guys, thanks for the awesome podcast.
Hi, and thanks for the question.
Thanks, Eric. So why are mom-and-pops doing better, but GameStop's having trouble and they're closing a lot of stores?
The only reason I laugh at the question is because, you know, that's a big can of worms. I think a good mom-and-pop shop does well, and I've been getting this more and more lately, and this used to be a problem, you know, back in the 90s, I noticed with places like Babbage's and stuff like that, where it got to the point where you stopped getting people who were specialized.
So knowledgeable employees.
You stopped getting knowledgeable employees who worked there. And I think that changed for a while. And then we're now back at the point where you're not, and this is just one of many reasons, you're back at the point where you're getting unknowledgeable employees. And not people, employees at places like GameStop and whatnot that are not really knowledgeable on any of this stuff.
Okay. Because it used to be like when I'm thinking of like Egghead software, et cetera, in the 80s, you had to get people that knew what the fuck they're talking about.
Exactly.
Computers.
Just
because
like,
if I came in asking for a computer, computers weren't ubiquitous. Not everyone knew what they were. So you needed employees that explained to me what the computer, you know, how they actually worked, what I actually needed.
Just like your Radio Shack employees with the Tandy hair. I mean, they had to have the Tandy hair because that's how you knew that they could sell you.
I never heard the expression Tandy hair before.
I use it all the time. I've probably used it on the podcast like
30
times.
No, you haven't. What the hell is Tandy hair?
It's a very specific... It's a very specific hairstyle that was popular in the 80s.
Do you have Tandy hair?
No, I don't. Okay. I do not have Tandy hair. So I think one thing that drives customers away is that they are not getting a level of customer service or knowledge about products that they would expect. Another thing is they walk into a GameStop now and feels like a hot topic.
They have to survive, though. They have to sell the shirts and the trinkets and the toys and loot crate items.
They have to, but at a certain point, they push that so much that I think it pushes people away. Walk into a good mom-and-pop shop, and you look around and you see nothing but video games.
Sure. Well, they have a billion different stores. So it's hard to be... At that point, it's hard to be like, we can hire specialized employees for all these billion stores. We have to just fill them up.
And that's also...
Like, they're like the McDonald's. Like, when you order at McDonald's, that person doesn't know how to make a hamburger or french fries necessarily. You know what I mean? Or they don't know the science behind it or what hamburger you enjoy more. What soda goes best with what burger? Okay. Like, you know what I mean?
It's also a matter of oversaturation of GameStops. Absolutely. You just don't need one every fucking six blocks.
No, it's like Starbucks.
You don't. And that's going to cause them to die out.
There are malls with more than one GameStop.
Plenty. Horton Plaza had two of them directly across from each other for the longest
time.
Which
is fucking insane.
We had two of them on Midway for the longest time. I mean, no one knows what Midway is, but basically Midway is a main shopping drag here near where we live, and it's I mean, literally, you could walk from the one GameStop to the other GameStop in 10 minutes.
So then they had to close one because
yeah, they closed one. Another thing would be they constantly, profit-wise, are, and we talked about this on a previous podcast about how insane it is. They're constantly shooting themselves in the foot on profits. We discussed this when we talked about the Circle of Life.
The Circle!
Okay, so a company like that makes the most money on used game sales.
Sure.
Yet they constantly put their newest games on sale for like 2 weeks. You know, from $59.99, they regularly drop these games, these new games that have been out for maybe a month, to $39.99, brand new, while still charging $52.99 for a used copy.
Doesn't make any sense.
How the fuck are they going to make money on that?
So that's just bad policy.
So what places like what we do, and I'm sure other mom and pop shops have things they do just like this, is okay, a brand new game comes out, and this is one of the worst things GameStop ever did, and this is another reason why I think mom and pop shops, you know, do well. GameStop started putting all their trade-in prices and cash prices online. You can literally pull up the GameStop website and go, what will I get in cash, or what will I get in credit for this? So what we do is we pull that up and we beat it by $2 to $5.
Sure.
And then instead of selling that used copy for $54.99 of that brand new game, we sell it for $44.99 because we have less overhead. So immediately we're beating a GameStop. We're beating the new price of a game by $15. We're beating GameStop by $10. And now people will come to us not just for retro, which they don't even offer.
Uh-huh. Well,
but they will come. Yeah, but that's a whole nother fucking story. Got a good juicy one on that for next podcast. Really good.
Is
juicy
Ian
one.
Teasing? Ian never teases topics for the next podcast.
We have a good one.
I don't fucking know about this. I'm the first one. You're finding out when I'm finding that out.
Yeah, I'll tell you about.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
We'll
it's just a podcast that you know we do. But
we'll work that one.
Okay.
But anyways, so I think these are all parts of it. I think knowledgeable employees, the breadth of software that you get at a mom and pop shop, and the fact that we fucking make better financial decisions in places like GameStop, and also mom and pop shops aren't on every corner.
They probably treat your employees better.
Yeah, you treat your employees better, and we don't force shit on customers.
Yeah, you don't sign up for the Power Up card, pre-order 50,000 games. I just want to buy something.
And we have two locations in San Diego that are spread out. People have to travel to us. That's more money supporting each location as opposed to trying to fucking support, you know,
so
25 locations in San Diego.
So Luna's going to expand across the U.S., is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we're taking over.
We're taking over. Last question. And by the way, if you want to ask the question, it's patreon.com/CUpodcast. This is the last one here.
Hi, gentlemen. This is Sean from Youngstown, Ohio. And I'm curious, as a kid, during a heated match of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, after losing to Mike Tyson, I was so upset that I threw my Nintendo controller into a wall and left a big dent into it. So, gentlemen, my question for you is, what's the most physical amount of damage you've done to, hopefully not humans, but done to something in a fit of video game rage? Keep up the great work with the podcast, and it's nice to hear, Ian, that you're doing better, or at least it seems like you're doing better, but keep going.
I'm trying.
Chronic illnesses are a real pain. Take care, all.
Well, Sean, I think you're a juvenile delinquent, and you should have been thrown, you know, into the county, you know, whatever the county school for troubled children. Jesus Christ, you threw your controller into the wall because of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out? Wow.
I actually think that's a more common practice than most would think. But
I'm trying to think of Nintendo era. When I got older, like competitive, like, hell, I'll say it, Worms Armageddon, I played, I was like ranked at one point, like they had that world ranking. So I got pissed when I lost those matches.
It's a hell of a game.
Fucking awesome game.
So I watched a guy in my neighborhood get pissed at, I actually almost want to say it was Super Punch-Out, but I'm going to say that maybe that influenced me. It might have been a sports game. But I clearly remember him taking a Super Nintendo controller and whipping it so hard into the brick fireplace that it shattered the controller and the buttons went everywhere. The most violent I've ever gotten, most damage I've ever done, I tend not to be really violent. I'm not a violent person. But when I get frustrated, I will throw sometimes my controller up in the air. Just a little bit. I'll be like, ah, Jesus Christ, like this. And then it will fall gently back in my lap because I do not want to damage it.
I've seen you do that.
Yeah, and I don't want to hurt anyone, so I'll be
it's
like...
It's almost cute.
I throw it up in the air and then I try to gingerly catch it. Well, there have been a number of times where I've thrown it up in the air and looked up like... And it's hit me in the face.
Okay.
So I've hit myself in the face with a lot of controllers.
My dad used to throw the controller down when I was beating him at double dribble. I don't know why. The only games he ever played with me were Top Gun...
Mm-hmm.
Which he bought for himself because the movie was huge, and I'm glad they're doing Top Gun 2. I will be there to see it. Top Gun 2 Maverick starring Tom Cruise. I will see that. But Double Dribble, which we've always brought up before. He didn't watch basketball. I didn't play basketball. Why did he buy me Double Dribble? It was probably on sale. You know, Toys R Us, he just wanted me to get like a double. Oh, I'll pay. And he bought it for me. And he was so pissed, like, I'm goddamn it. Throw the controller down. It's like, we're playing Double Dribble.
It sounds like that one time you rage quit in pro wrestling during.
I don't think I rage quit.
I think thousands of viewers, I don't think it was
rage quit.
I body slammed you like twice, and
nope,
you were like,
don't,
"Fuck
that was
it.
Rage quit." I don't that recall was a rage that. Quit. I don't recall that happening at all, sir. Don't recall that. But I'm trying to think if I ever actually damaged stuff. I was always too preoccupied with, oh my god, I can't break my controller.
Yeah.
I just slammed my hand. I've actually hurt my arm before just like slamming it on my hand or something like that.
I will hurt my leg sometimes. Like if I'm playing.
Smack those meaty thighs.
It's a typical response when I'm playing shooters.
Okay.
I will slap my thigh. Be like,
that's like
an
oldie time. Yeah, dag nabbit Parodius.
And when it gets really, really sore, that's when I generally stop.
Nice red, pink ass thighs.
Pinball generally gets me a little more worked up. That's why I'm real happy for sturdy crossbars. I generally slap the crossbars.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I don't do that. When I see people do that, I go, ooh, that's a high, well-oiled machine there. A lot of working parts.
Well, you don't have to put a lot of force into it to have it make a satisfying sound. So really, it's just like.
How's your pinball machine doing, by the way? Is it working?
It works. I just...
You never play it.
I need to get the score reels replaced on it.
Oh, okay.
And the local guy will do it for me, but I don't exactly have the extraneous cash for new...
Oh, they're expensive?
The digital score lights are expensive for a Paragon.
When I move, I will finally get my pinball machine that I want. I still want to try the Big Lebowski one, see if it's good. All right, so thanks for the questions. We have more, but Ian's in a little bit of pain, and we'll just save them for next time. Go to patreon.com/CU podcast if you want to support us. You want to see the full video podcast. This is one long podcast we cut up in parts, and you can leave us a question or comment. So that's our podcast.
Yeah.
We didn't do a bad job. Like us on Facebook? No, we're not on Facebook. Someone started a CU Podcast Nation Facebook page.
Oh, really?
I think someone said they were going to start that. I think we're on Reddit, too. But we're on Stitcher and Podbean and iTunes, Google Play. Subscribe, leave a comment. Like us. That helps a lot. We have the Patreon, patreon.com/CU Podcast. If you want to advertise with us, it's CU Podcast@thepunkeffect.com. Reach 30,000 people. Some of them that like us, some of us that hate us.
But they keep listening anyway.
We got a lot of haters out there, Ian. A lot of people that are making their videos and giving us the business.
No, people like us, too.
People like us, too. I'm more concerned with them. Because those are the people I actually meet. And they're friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually unique. And they're fruitful society members. They're like, they contribute. They're not. That's what I mean. Those are people I care about. I don't care about the denizens.
You're focusing too much on it.
The denizens?
And don't make me laugh. So laughing cannot happen.
I do it every now and then. All right, I'm going to go get... I got to drop Ian off. Then I'm going to go get some Wendy's chili. I hope it's open right now. So for Ian Ferguson, I'm Pat Contry. Thanks a lot for supporting us. It means a lot.
It does.
And give a shout out to the CFOs on on Twitter for the awesome podcast theme, which they are going to have up on iTunes once they figure out things here and there. And I'll have it up on YouTube after that at some point. Both versions of it I'll have on.
Yeah!
See you podcast time. See you later.